Hello, and welcome back to the Train Smart, Run Strong podcast. This is episode 2. I'm here with everyone's best running friend, Treg. Hey, Treg, how you doing today?
Gosh, hi. I'm so flattered that that's my new name or
everyone's
new moniker.
Best running friend. I know. You know what? It's not even new. I think it's always been your moniker, but people are just now learning that. So we are here to record episode 2, where we're going over the infamous Jersey City half and infamous for me, amazing race for Treg. We're going to be going over our race recaps, but we're first going to start talking about how our week's been, how recovery has been going for Treg. We also hope that you're listening on your long run. Totally understand if you're just kind of like hanging out listening to us too, but we're really happy that you're back. We're super excited to keep bringing these episodes back to you. We're really excited also for all of your guys' feedback. Seems like a lot of you guys really enjoyed the first episode, and we are always open to more discussion around, hey, what do you guys want to listen to? What do you guys want to feel like you're talking about with us? So keep sending me messages. You can also, I think in Spotify, I'm not sure in Apple if it's the same, you can like ask us questions through there or just give us some feedback. And please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and like the episodes. That always helps us as well. So thank you for coming back and let's get into it. Treg, how has your week been? What's been going on?
Gosh. Yeah, not much.
As it should be.
Yeah, I in terms of physical activity, not much, which I think is important. I will say though, I'm sort of forgetting what day of the week it is, I think for a couple of reasons. One is in a training block, I get so used to like associating the day of the week with the type of workout I'm doing. So it's like, oh, I have a workout this morning. Like it's obviously Wednesday. Oh, I have a like long run workout. It's obviously Saturday. And now it's like, I don't have that grounding principle. It's like, what's going on? which is, neither here nor there, I suppose. But I will say the other reason why I'm a little thrown off schedule-wise is I was up in Boston on Monday, which was awesome.
Yes. It was hot. Treg kept texting me like, it's hot. It's really hot. I would ask her like a ton of questions of how everything's going and her answer's like, it's really hot. It feels hot out here. And because Treg and I have PTSD, if you know, from New York City 2022, that's all we could talk about when the weather is just a little bit toasty. So give us a recap of Boston, Treg. I feel like that's a great way to actually start this episode.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'll start off by saying I was not running it. I did not do a Jersey City Boston double. I know people who have done that and like, no, not those two specifically, but in general. And that's epic. Perhaps like not me this time, at least.
yeah.
But yeah, so when I finished up in Jersey on Sunday, I went up to Boston. I had a bunch of friends running. I think, you and Nick both had a bunch of athletes running. So I basically positioned myself. I'm trying to get the lingo right. I was like at the Newton Hills, like just past mile 17. And it was epic. I was there, from pretty much the very beginning. And then I stayed for, I got out there, let's call it like 10:30. I went back to meet up with folks around 3 something. So camped out there. The energy was awesome. There were a couple live DJs. I would call it like a quarter mile down the road.
Fun.
And we were further up. So it was like loud enough there that we could hear the music, but also like quiet enough that you could hear all the cheering. I will say I got a blister on my finger from ringing the cowbell, which I think is like, the battle wound that I...
Why is spectating so hard?
It's more tiring. No, I maintain that. Having done both, it is way more tiring to spectate than it is, I think, to run the race, at least in like different capacities, right? Like you're...
Can we also talk about the fact that you ran a marathon on Sunday and then stood for like 8 hours spectating on Monday? That's insane. That's like you might as well have just run Boston.
Oh, gosh. I will say, though, and maybe that leads us into a little bit about like Jersey City, and then we can get more into like the fun stuff, Boston and whatnot. But yeah, I think I was able to do that and like stand and cheer and like function and also like walk a mile and a half to brunch after the marathon on
Yeah, we made Sunday. Trek walk literally over a mile to get to brunch. We were like, just pretend this is like New York where you have to walk a mile to get out of that area.
Yeah.
But it's brunch. It's for brunch, which is a good cause.
Listen, I will walk for brunch.
We'll walk for brunch. That's another t-shirt we have to make, which by the way, so many messages about the I Survived NYC 2022 that I got from last week. And I'm surprised that I'm here right now. I'm surprised that we're still friends because I have not gotten one in the middle. Still haven't gotten one.
Okay, well, stay tuned. I think that can be the common thread in the podcast is like, has Treg sent Vicky the shirt yet? You know, TBD. Like, you're going to have to tune in next time to find out. But basically, what I will say is like, I felt tired after the race for sure. But I felt okay. Like none of that felt super crazy to me. And I think that's a function of a handful of things, right? But if I were to choose two, I think one, my training, which is a very like personal thing, varies from person to person. I think Nick and I have like figured out what might work here. We're going to try some new stuff going forward to build off of it, which is great. But the thing that like I will shout from the rooftops is like my fueling.
Yes.
So that actually
period.
So that starts actually way before the marathon itself. And I'm not just talking about like the 3-day carb increase before, I'm talking about through the whole training cycle. So, I mean, I'll go ahead and say it because like this was something I really worked hard on. So I did my long runs on Saturdays for the most part, except for 2 weeks where I like for travel reasons needed to do long runs on Wednesdays, and that was a whole other can of worms. But anyway,
chaos.
Absolute chaos, but we did it. But Fridays I sort of had an idea, okay, like I'm gonna go in and I wanna practice my carb load because in previous marathons I've done the carb increase, but I felt kind of like bleh. Which yeah. I think is the technical term. But also I think
it is too.
And like to some extent is to be expected, right? Like or so we've like, you know, some folks will say because you know, you're maybe eating slightly different things or you know, extra carbs help retain water. Like there are a handful of reasons why you might not feel as you usually do, you know, on the other 5-6 days a week where you're not doing this. So I was like, all right, I'm going to practice A so that I can figure out what mix of foods maybe mitigates it or I get used to it. I don't know which one. But also so that when it comes time to do the longer carb increase, I know exactly what to reach for.
Yeah.
And so that was great. I basically had, and I would this, you know, this do what works for you. But what I did was I actually wrote down what I had and like the approximate carbs.
You're so organized.
It's a little obsessive, but it's okay. And like, you know, that's what worked for me again. And so then when it came time to do it over the course of 3 days, I was like, okay, if I roughly know I need 100 grams more, I know exactly what like will get me there. And I know my stomach's used to it. So I think that level of preparation was helpful. And now also like to the extent that that's what I'll continue to tolerate, like I have that in my toolbox for future marathons, for future halves, like for future distance races. And also what that meant was I went into my long runs super fueled. Like, you know, I wasn't running 26.2 in those long runs, to be clear. So I didn't necessarily need the full, you know, X amount of days leading up to it. But I was, you know, carb loaded.
That's how we want to be. Also, yeah. It plays into the fact that like experience is also everything. Yeah. And the fact that you have not only done this before, but you now know that this level of organization is something that is super helpful for you to mm-hmm. not only learn from this experience and know, hey, I did these things right. I'm writing them down. I know exactly what's going to work for me. That builds your confidence. That lets you go into the race feeling like, okay, I've been testing things out before. I know that I'm feeling good today. And it just really allows you to approach any other race situation as well in the future with confidence. And confidence all comes from just testing, knowing, experience, and also feeling organized, I think, in my opinion. And I think for a lot of people who are like us, which is most runners, I think really like routine. They like that organization aspect as well. So if you, I think people should steal your idea and just start to write these things down and just get a better sense of exactly what works for them when it comes to your fueling plan, instead of feeling really, really shocked and surprised and like not really knowing what should I eat for lunch, what should I eat for breakfast. Especially, I think it comes into play when you're traveling for a race, which wasn't the case for you this time. But like I have a couple athletes running London this weekend, and it is a source of stress when it comes to, hey, what am I going to be eating? Like I'm not really familiar with London in general. I don't really know what to do. But if you have a better sense of, okay, I know this type of sandwich has worked for me before, it kind of breaks things down a little bit and it relieves the stress. It's like, okay, I just have to look for either a grocery store or like some kind of place that has something similar to this, and I know I'm going to be fine. And I think that comes with just understanding yourself and your body and then organizing it, really.
100%. And, you know, I'll be the first to say that like there can be a fine line between like writing these things down and recording and then becoming like hyper obsessive. And so
true.
To the extent I found myself doing that, you know, I had a support team around me who would be like, okay, but how do you feel? And so I just want to highlight what you said there is like tuning into how your body feels, right? Like sometimes the numbers and how you feel, like there's a point where like there is science, and then there's a point where it's like you need to tune into what your body's telling you.
Well, that also goes into, you know, the watches that we're wearing, our wearables. And I think especially when I was leading up to Chicago, I relied so heavily on my Garmin up until that day. But that's also because I didn't trust my body leading into Chicago because I got COVID. So I was like, I was like looking to my watch so much, asking it, how am I feeling today? How am I feeling today? How's my HRV? How's my heart rate? All of these things. And I relied so heavily on that because I just couldn't trust my body. It gave me COVID 2.5 weeks before a marathon. Like I didn't trust it. And then I think I don't remember if I said this in episode one, but I've definitely told people around me the day that I woke up for the Chicago marathon, Garmin suggested that I do a 30-minute easy run. And it was like, yeah, you're really, you know, you didn't sleep well last night and you've been feeling like shit recently. You should do 30 minutes easy. I'm like, and that's at that point I was like, screw you. I'm going up for it today. I don't even believe this. So I think it's just a reminder to always, always ask yourself first how you're feeling. And then you can look at the data that you have, the data that your watches are giving you, all of that stuff, and kind of blend them together and never, ever let it ruin your day, because that's not going to be helpful, even if you are feeling like crap.
Yeah. And like, definitely easier said than done. I remember after
100%.
And I remember after the United half, which like went well for me by, you know, numerically, and it was all good and like thrilled with it. I looked at my heart rate data after and I was like, this is weird. It is like X beats per minute higher than it was on this other, like much longer run workout. I did marathon pace and I'm like texting Nick and I'm like, this is strange. He goes, first of all, this is one piece of data and like a very long training block. Don't worry about it. And then I looked at my cadence and it might've been cadence lock, which is another thing. I do wear a heart rate monitor for a handful of reasons, like a chest strap. But like sometimes it doesn't connect. Like there are reasons why it might not have, but like regardless, I will say that there was 12 hours there after the race where I was like, what, you know, why is this happening? I've run comparable paces in training and my heart rate's been much lower. Like, but there's also the fact like you're racing, your adrenaline's higher, people are cheering. Also, United half is hilly. So like there are a lot of factors, but so I think to the extent it serves you and is a tool, helpful tool, use it. To the extent that it isn't, like being able to recognize that and take a step back,
It's kind of like, if it's helping you, let it help you. If it's not helping you, don't let it not help you.
Yeah. Like, there are other.
Exactly.
There are other tools you can use.
100%.
And these all come with practice and with time. And like the tools I've used have certainly changed over my let's call it four years of running now. Which is also crazy to think about.
That is really wild. It's really wild. Yeah. But I feel like this is kind of a nice segue anyways into just your race in general. Yeah. So do you want to start telling us how it went? First, let me tell you guys the results, because Treg is a little bit too humble, I'm sure, to like actually tell you what happened, but she absolutely crushed the day. She ended up with a huge PR. What was it, like 9-minute PR or something?
9 minutes.
Nine-minute PR, a BQ with tons of time to spare for the buffer. I saw her at mile, 25.5, 20 or almost 26. And I keep rewatching that video. If you guys follow me on Instagram, I posted it, but you were so pumped. Like, you literally were like, let's go. And I was like, damn, like that is energy that I would want at mile 26 of a marathon. And I sure did not have that at the end of my marathon. So inspiration for all of us. But yeah, it was an incredible day. And I'm so happy to have been there for at least a very little bit of it, like right at the start line and then towards the end when we saw you. So give us a recap. Tell us what was going on in your mind.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I will say, just quickly, you say you were there for a little bit. You were there though for like the very critical moments. So I would say like the moments before the race where it's like, it's so easy to just sort of like, yeah, absolutely panic and then like throw your race plan out the window because you're just like, okay, you're just gonna do this. But like, you and Nick were there, and it was just like, and Nick turned to me, he's like, if you catch us in the first 3 miles, because you guys were doing the half, so our pace setting out would be different, don't.
Words of advice.
Like, okay, that's like a great point. So yeah, I was like, okay, so Nick told me that if I find them, so it's like, okay, don't find them. So just like settle in. And then also I saw you at mile, I think it was like 15. It did take me a second to recognize who you were.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
But that was epic. It took me a second to recognize who you were, because like, I didn't know what you were going to be wearing after the race. And you were
wearing like sunglasses. I was wearing like a different pair of shoes and leggings and all of this stuff. And I saw Treg, and I was just cheering for her. And it was also just me. Like, I hadn't found Nick yet after he finished. And I saw your face, and I couldn't read whether it was confusion as to like who's cheering for you or you just felt like crap. And I didn't know which one it was. I figured after you told me, but I still, you know, screamed like crazy. I looked back at the video that I took, and you're not in the video at all, because I'm actually like looking at you and trying to film, but I get like just in front of you every But of course, you can hear my booming voice.
It's okay. You were like willing me into the frame.
Exactly.
But I will say that was a critical point, because with this course, we actually run with the folks doing the half, basically up until the half. Like, we split off at like, call it mile 13. And the point one, the half marathoners like kind of bear right, and then we have to keep going straight.
Which is cruel.
It's hard. I will say it's hard.
It's cruel for the marathoners.
Yeah. And what I will say, like, Nick had great advice going into those miles, was like, don't get caught up in the folks who are finishing their race, right? Because they're going to be, that's when they're turning on the gas. And that's when you want to still be relaxed.
So true.
And so it was an exercise of don't get caught up in people who are going faster. And it's so easy to do. You get energy from the people around you, but also mentally say, okay, like, and now we go.
We
and
start,
I think,
lap two.
We start lap two. And I think maybe the challenging piece there is the amount of runners really thinned out. The crowds cheering actually got a lot bigger.
Because it was later in the day.
And the half runners, beautiful. I think, were cheering. And like, it was just so seeing you at 15, which the way the course worked was like, so we peeled, you know, the half runners finished, we kept going. And then we had sort of like a couple of miles where we were kind of away from the rest of the course. And so mile 15 or wherever it was that I saw you is when we were sort of coming back into where everyone else was. And yeah. So that was just a critical point. And then mile 25 and change or wherever it is, I saw you. You were also standing there with so many people who I did not expect to see. So if yeah. you actually look early on in that video, you can see I'm like holding my hands to my chest. Like, what is going
that.
On?
I love that.
I was just so excited to see everyone. So that was great. So yeah, I mean, high level with the race. I'll keep it short, because it, you know, I'll start with, I'm super excited by how everything turned out and was yes. so lovely. And I was so flattered to have whoever was out there, people texting me, cheering me on virtually. I thank you so much. Like, first and foremost,
I love it.
That was great. Yeah. So I'll say, you know, the first half, it was still on the cooler side, which was awesome. We had the benefits of starting at 7 a.m. So Nick shared with me that it was around 9 a.m. that it started getting pretty warm. Yeah. And looking at my splits and remembering like the timing of what I did, and I'll get into that. Like, I think that sounds about right. But of course, this all impacts people differently. But I will say the right. first half felt great, nice and flowy. I was getting gels down and continue to get gels down every 20 minutes. I had a moment, I would say maybe mile 17, where I started feeling nauseous. I remembered what you said in Chicago to yourself, which is, if I feel nauseous, I just need to shove another gel down. And I did. I was like holding one, and I was so tempted just to take half and just toss it. And I was like, no. And luckily I did, because I would say like a mile and change later, like, it completely resolved.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me at that yeah. exact point too. Yeah. So I totally get it. And I don't think we're alone in that, no. in saying, even if you are fueling correctly, that can still happen. And usually it's just like, yeah, your body is exerting a lot of energy. You probably need a little bit more, maybe even more yeah. than what you trained with, because guess what? You're exerting more energy than you ever did in training. If it's yeah. going well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And even if it's not going well,
yeah.
like,
yeah. It's yeah, a race atmosphere. It's completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, shove that down. So then it got to, let's say, after I saw you, and I remember, so Nick caught me at like mile 8 or 9, I want to say. Like,
yeah.
So one thing I will say is, I think there were course markers out there. Some of them were more obvious than others. I yeah. wasn't actually paying much attention to those. I was actually paying more attention to the 5K markers, because they had the mats, and I had turned off auto lap on my watch. And so I was just auto lapping every 5K. And so I was, which is why I'm like, I don't know which exact mile he found me, but it was enough to run a few miles together before he had to peel off for the half. And he said, okay, just, you know, as a reminder, like, it might start to get warm. So like, don't panic if you need to adjust, which is huge, because I think in the past, when I've felt the need to adjust for whatever reason, it was so easy to get down on myself. Like,
totally.
How could you let this happen? Like, you've worked hard and now you, but like, it doesn't, like, it's a long race. Like, yeah. a mile of adjustment doesn't mean much. So I think at that point, let's say when it started getting warm, we were kind of by ourselves. And when I looked at my splits, I was like, yep, there's exactly where I adjusted. The difference is, rather than like in the past, I will have made that adjustment and then just sort of like stayed at that. I was then able yeah. to pick it back up.
That's amazing. And so that's probably also a testament to you feeling that calm of yeah. like, okay, it's warm. That doesn't mean I'm throwing the race away, but I'm just going to pivot in the moment and see what happens versus yeah. like, oh my God, it's hot. Ah, this is not going how I expected. And then kind of like self combusting, which is similar to what happened to me, but continue.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I've totally been there before. And so, mm-hmm. So I would say I had like a mile and a half where I literally just like, I'll call it a reset.
Like, yeah.
The paces Love were it. Completely different than what I did for the rest. It was just what I needed to do. And then I turned it back on. And when I say turn it back on, like, let's call it for the last 5-ish miles, it was slightly more conservative than where I opened, just because I was like, because you're about to go along like a really tough, so I pulled up at the map so I could refer to the mileage correctly, like 22 to 24 was like, it wasn't quite a highway, but it was a road completely exposed. The sun was like high enough at that point that there was no shade. We were by ourselves. And I was like, I'm going to want to be able to like hammer through that for, yes, physically, but also just like mentally. It will be really, really hard if I get stuck there. So got through that. And then I was like, okay, now I'm at mile 24, 25. I got through that. And I was like, I know exactly where I am because of all the runs you and I have done together. I know exactly where those mile markers are. I'm guessing my friends are going to be around here. And so then I picked it up that last mile. My last half mile was my fastest, which I was super amped about. And it felt great. I mean, like, it felt like I was running a marathon. Like, let's not.
Right. Of course. Legs are tired, but you're able to pick it up, which is huge. I also think that the way that you kind of organized it in your mind, again, going back to that word that you've used already, is like kind of just breaking it up into different pieces of the course that you had looked up. You've also raced the half before, but you've never raced this full distance. You just kind of knew from looking at the map, really, which I think a lot of people can learn from. It's like looking at the map can be super helpful before going into a race, especially a race you've never run before, just so you can break it up mentally. Like, okay, there's a huge straightaway here. Let me get through that. Then I turn back into the roads. Let me get through that part. And I think breaking it up, even breaking it up between how many gels you're taking every 20 minutes, I think that can be so helpful to compartmentalize that into your mind and just help the race go by faster mentally. Honestly,
it definitely did. I did think to myself, all right, I have 3 gels left.
Yeah, right.
Like, I was carrying more than I anticipated needing, just in case. You never know what's going to happen. But in my head, I was able to be like, okay, I carried some in my shirt, I carried some in my shorts. And I was like, okay, like, the shirt is done, which means I only have like X amount left. So yeah, I mean, I totally did that.
Can you tell everyone how many gels you carried in total?
I carried 10 and I took 9.
Yes.
And
listen up, folks. It can be done. I know we hear a lot that it's like hard to carry so many gels. It is hard. That there's absolutely – what? Tell people what top you were wearing.
Yeah, I was wearing the Wazelle Paquito long bra, which was
shout
great.
Out.
Yeah, huge shout
sponsor
out.
Sponsor us, what?
And then I wore New Balance shorts that also had pretty deep pockets, or like spandex shorts on the side that had pockets on the side.
Did you carry a handheld?
I carried a handheld with just water. So
gels in the handheld. So you stuffed 5 gels in your top and 5 gels in your shorts.
I had 4 in my top and 6 in my shorts.
Damn, those shorts.
Oh, yeah. And they have a drawstring, so they stayed up.
That's necessary. It can be done, folks. I mean, she took one. Did you ever – I know you said at mile 17 that you started to feel like – did you take that one earlier, that gel? Or did you kind of – it around the 20-minute mark?
It was around the 20-minute mark. And, you know, it was an exercise of convincing myself more so to finish it than to, like, start it. True. I will say there was a person taking photos and I remember, actually, I took a gel at mile 24.
Wow. Great. That's, I mean, that's exactly what we should be doing.
Yeah. And so they have a great picture because I, like, at that point.
Wait,
you know,
I need to see that picture.
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Like, you stuffing down a gel at 23.
It's like.
That's iconic.
You can see that I have, like, the gel, like, in my cheek.
Squirrel. Chipmunk cheeks.
Yeah, like, truly. But I think that was also, you know, that was hugely helpful. And, yeah, so the last half mile was epic. Seeing all of you was awesome. Tearing up the bike lane into the finish was great. So awesome to have like you and Nick there with his family, and then my friends there, my sisters were there. So all in all, a great day. Did have to make some adjustments, but
it happens.
It happens, right?
It's probably going to happen in the majority of people's races, making adjustments and pivoting. So it's important to talk about too.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, really excited. Since then I haven't run at all. I won't run until this coming Tuesday. So that'll make
recovery.
Eight day well, just over a week of no running at all. Like absolutely nothing. So, and then I'll get back to it. Slow run.
And what
back
about
up.
any like strength that you've been doing?
No.
Good. You're like, is this a question? Am I supposed to be doing strength? I wanted to ask you mainly because I get this question a lot, and I recommend to all my athletes 1 to 2 weeks of complete rest. That is always my recommendation. I myself took almost 2 weeks. I do think I started running in that second week as well, like just easy runs, run walks, honestly, but no strength for me. So love it.
Yeah.
Love
and
it.
And I think what it will hopefully let me do is just absorb the work from this past block and like keep building, because consistency is like a very powerful thing. So looking forward to it.
What's up next? Do you know, or do you want to share?
So we haven't decided on a fall marathon, which by the way is not the only like thing that counts as next, but I sort of think like in terms of a longer term horizon, but shorter term, a couple of exciting things. I'm going to do the mini 10K. Here in New York. I love that
race. One of my favorite races.
Absolutely love that race. And then I haven't decided, but I think I'm going to try like where to do this, but I do want to work on my mile time.
Love that.
And so just like
fun.
Work on some of that shorter speed stuff. So I don't necessarily have many races upcoming like scheduled, but that's sort of what I'm hoping to do short term, and then going to figure out, you know, my fall schedule, but we'll get through summer training first. But before we talk about like the changing temperatures and maybe some like guidance on what that might look like, I do, you know, you were out there this past weekend, wanted to check in and just see, you know, what's going on. What, you know, what went on for race day for you? Because I think your stories,
people want to know. No, I'm kidding. I want to know. So, if you're a therapist, you can help me out. No, I'm kidding. I mean, I obviously I know what happened, I know what it felt. So, I'm gonna stick really to like just kind of describing exactly what happened and what I was feeling in that moment. And then also share that I am on my journey of finding a mental health therapist. And why is it so hard to find a therapist in this country? Yeah. It's crazy. I know that my sister's a psychologist, and she is a little bit, what's the right word? She definitely wants to find a provider that has a certain background in terms of their education and what they can help me with, especially since I have a background in disordered eating and just like my performance anxiety that I've had throughout my years in playing tennis and all of that. So just really making sure that I find the right person has been a little bit harder than I expected. Like I kind of expected to just do a Google search and like find a ton of people and like set up a meeting. And that's not how it's been going. Probably for the better. Because again, similar to physical therapy or similar to healthcare in general, you want to find someone who is right for you. And if I find someone who's not necessarily right for me, it doesn't mean that therapy doesn't work for me. It means that I'm probably with the wrong provider. So it will take a little bit of digging. I'm just like, I'm shocked at how hard it is to even like Google it. Like I could barely even Google. I was like Googling, you know, therapists in my area, and some of them are like not actual psychologists, which is fine. Obviously, it works for everyone, but it's just interesting that there isn't an easier way. There's things like BetterHelp, I'm sure you've heard of, and I definitely looked into that. But I think what I need right now is someone who takes my insurance, mainly because my sister said, you know, you're probably more likely to continue with it if you're not like paying $300, $400 out of pocket on every session.
100%.
At least to start with, and just to build a relationship with someone in the beginning, I think it's sometimes better to go through the insurance that we're already paying for. And I say that as someone who doesn't take insurance as a healthcare provider, but I also don't think my rates are like that high compared to some of the rates that I've seen. So something for everyone, you know, it depends on what we're talking about. So yeah, that just wanted to share that before I go into exactly what happened to me on Sunday. And I also wanted to say, I've already talked a lot about how I felt going into Sunday, and those feelings were genuine. Mm-hmm. And I really don't know how to explain. I feel like, trust me, I feel like a fraud. Like I, that is one of the biggest emotions that I've been dealing with since race day, is like, almost like I've let people down in being inauthentic with how I was feeling because of what happened. And that is the furthest thing from the truth. And I've, you know, my husband has told me, like, you know what's true. Like, you don't have to keep explaining yourself. And I know that I don't, but I want to also be authentic in how I'm explaining how I feel. And that's absolutely a part of it. Like, it almost makes me laugh at myself being like, I'm listening to myself on these podcasts that I went on, and even in our podcast talking about this weekend. And I was like so full of light and so excited and so genuinely excited that like I didn't feel race anxiety and didn't feel pressure. And that is all true. Like that was not a lie. So it's weird. It really is. That's why I keep saying like I haven't even really started to unpack all of this, because it doesn't make sense to me how that can happen. There have been a lot of people, because this was, let me start by just saying what happened, because I don't know who's listening and who has seen my Instagram.
I will say before you go into that, though, I just want to jump in and say, you know, it's great talking to you about these things, in part because like you say what I'm going to say to you before I can say it. Like you're like, I know it actually doesn't mean I'm a fraud. I'm like, oh good. I was about to like tell her that, and she's like sorted that out. So, but what I do want to say is like, no, you're not a fraud. You're human. And like one thing that we've talked about even earlier in this episode, you can go in to a race and things happen.
Totally. Like,
you might need to pivot, and this was your pivot. And that's fine.
That's a good point.
And I do like, I said this to you, I think on text, but when we're racing, we're very vulnerable.
So vulnerable. It's so true.
The smallest things, the biggest things, whatever.
Yeah.
Can come into play.
Absolutely.
And so I do also want to thank you for sharing this and being so open about it. I think it's challenging to talk about. And also you're being very open about the process of finding someone who can help and working on yourself and how difficult that is. And I think that, you know, helps, you know, folks feel like they might not be alone in that. And, you know, it certainly helps me. So before you give the recap of what happened, just wanted to say that. So now you may go ahead, but I
shall continue.
Yes.
So for anyone who's listening who hasn't seen my Instagram, which I don't think will be a lot of people because we promote this on Instagram, but just in case, I had a panic attack and walked off the course at mile 3 of my half marathon. So that's another thing too. There have been so many people thought I was running Boston, which is random. Oh, okay. And people thought I was also running a marathon. I can't respond to every single comment. And if you were following me and you thought I was racing Boston, and I just feel like you're probably not listening to this episode, but I just had to clarify that. Like, I was not running the marathon. I was running the half. So at mile 3 is when everything blew up, which is like really not that far into it. It was 25 minutes in. So it was really, really, really soon and very unexpected. And it's interesting because 5 minutes, I don't know if you heard this, Treg, but Treg, Nick, and I were all standing at the start line. And Nick, who is our coach, we mentioned before, he was running this race to help pace me, which is something that I have never experienced. I've never had a pacer before. I've never run a race with anyone before. I've really only, and I've said this before, I said this in episode 1, like I am a very solo runner other than running with you, Treg. And a lot of our runs are easy runs, right? We don't really do workouts together. So I'm a very solo runner. I always have been. I've been running since I was like 10 or 11 years old. So like solo running to me is kind of my jam. So I've never had anyone pace me before. I've never had anyone run a race with me before. So all of that was new. And again, played into it is definitely not anyone's fault, but it absolutely played into how I was approaching this race. And so we were standing in the corral and I said to Nick, this was probably 2 minutes before the gun went off. And I said to Nick, should I not turn on my watch? Should I not hit start on my watch?
I
shouldn't do that. That is, I think, that's actually the second indicator, because there is one other thing that happened before, but was the second indicator that I was like, maybe things are starting to creep up a little bit. Like maybe, maybe it would be better if I just didn't look at my pace at all, because I trust my training. I'm okay with that. It wasn't really worrisome, but now that I look back at it, I'm like, I have never on any race before considered not starting my watch. Like this is the first race where I've pulled up to the start line and been like, maybe this isn't going to be the best for me to keep looking at my splits. And I have someone here with me, like might as well just not think about it. It's fine. And we both kind of looked at each other and Nick was like, if that's what you want to do, sure. And I was like, we were too close to the race starting for me to pivot that much in that moment, even though Nick and I have both said like that probably would have made a huge difference for me. Either way, I decided to start my watch. One other thing that happened that kind of like put doubt in my mind, and this is absolutely not me saying I was injured going into this, because I was not injured, but stepping into the corral, I stepped on my left leg and my quad seized, which has never...
Wait, you stepped on your left leg? Oh, meaning you took a step with your left leg.
Exactly. So you know how you had to go under like the ribbin to get into the corral?
Yeah, but I was like, how did you step on your leg?
I just stepped into the corral with my left leg and my quad seized. And that's never happened before, which I was kind of like, ooh, that was weird. Like, okay, whatever. The day before, my like left ankle wasn't feeling great for the shakeout run, but that's happened to me before. It really wasn't something that like put doubt in my mind. It's just these little things that I'm starting to kind of think about, not putting doubt in my mind, but it'll all make sense when I get further into the story. So we're running on pace. I honestly like don't really remember much of the race, to be completely honest, and it all happened so quickly. But I remember in the first mile or two, there was 1 second where I was looking at my watch, and then there was 1 second where it said we were running like a 6:25, which is way too fast. And so I look at Nick, I was like, we're not running a 6:25, are we? And he's like, no, we're not. It's fine. And I was like, okay. So, but to me, it was kind of like, okay, I feel good. And like my watch definitely thinks I'm running fast and I feel good. Not a problem. Then the next thing I know, I'm turning a corner. And this is where I think my like trigger started, or around this time. And something else happened that I'm not going to go into, because it's just not a story that I want to talk about. And it's something that I want to keep to myself. But this is kind of around that time. I turned a corner and the sun started beating down on my back, which if you recall, you and I did a workout with Nick over the summer, that 18 miler when he came into town.
Oh, yeah.
And just for everyone who's listening for the backstory on that, it was a really hot July day and it was before the Chicago Marathon. So we were doing 18 miles and I felt really nauseous, and nauseous in the sense that like I felt like I was going back to my experience at New York, which if you guys know was a terrible experience in how I felt. So that I think heat on my back was kind of like, ooh, it's getting hot. Okay. That's not really what I want. And just like kind of going into these thoughts of like, is it hotter than I think? Am I going to feel as nauseous as I did that day? That's what I think started it. And then next thing I know, I look down at my watch and I'm like, I can't hold this pace. I can't do this. This is too hard. Within seconds, Nick was next to me and I thought this has passed. Like I thought 2 seconds has passed, but I think like a minute had passed because time felt like it was going very fast to me.
Yeah.
Nick was immediately like, are you okay? Like, is everything okay? And I was expecting that question. And the only answer I could come up with was no. Like and Nick immediately was like, let's slow down. It's fine. It's fine. And my whole body was like, no. My chest feels tight. I can barely breathe. Then I started getting like weird blackout spots in my vision. And that's when I was like, I'm scared. Like, I don't know what's happening. I feel like my chest is really tight. I can't catch my breath. This is way too fast. And at this point, we had dropped our pace. Like, we're not even running as fast as we were in the beginning, which wasn't even fast. Like, I think I also got really irritated at people in my comments like, you started out too fast. It's like, no, I started out actually right on pace for the pace that I've been training for, but I then slowed down and that didn't help. Like, I still felt like my chest was beating and I couldn't catch my breath and I just wanted to stop. Like, there was no other, there's nothing else going through my mind. I was like, I don't want to go through this. I don't want to run 10 more miles after this. This is not what I want to do. I don't want to be here. And so I just made that decision. I said, I looked at Nick and I said, I'm really sorry. I want to stop. And he was like, let's slow it down. Let's slow it down. Being very encouraging, of course, nothing. Yeah, no. He said nothing wrong or nothing that made me even more nervous or anything. And I think a part of it too was I felt like I was, I don't know, disappointing him, even though that's not true because he's not the type of person to get disappointed. But that's the first thing that ran through my mind. And I just walked off. Like, that's literally what happened. As soon as I walked off, I immediately felt better. But my heart rate was high. Like, Nick, immediately we had to go into planning mode because he had to go out and find you and kind of make the most of the race. And I had to find my way back because I was in a really weird part of the race. Like, I was not close to the start line where my husband was. Like, I dropped out probably the worst part of the race. Like, I probably should have kept running.
And I'm looking at the map and it's like, you were,
it's so
like,
random.
That mile is like inside the larger loop. So it's
yes.
Like,
right. So I had to, and that was the other thing is like, I then had to walk back, but the course was also looping back.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to walk because I was cold and I didn't want to run. And I was also crying my eyes out, like on the phone with my mom. And it was so awkward because I didn't want to start running because then I'm like, people are going to think that I'm like trying to cut the course or something.
Like going
that.
The
like,
wrong
I don't
way.
Know. Yeah, going the wrong way or like something's happening. So it was just a very weird like hour after that where I was, you know, crying my eyes out, but also like my heart rate was still high, but I also felt a lot better than I did in the race. So I knew that it was the right decision, but all in all, just a very weird experience. And I think comes down to, I don't know, it performance anxiety, 100%, trigger from New York, 100%. And something that I think I've been open about, at least I know I mentioned it in my Chicago race recap. I'm not over putting pressure on myself. Like that's definitely something that I have dealt with my entire life because sports to me has seemed bigger than it actually is. It should be a drop in the ocean. And yet to me, it has always been like, this is your life. You need to get a scholarship because of this and all of that. When now it's like, no, your brain can actually relax and be okay and it's going to be fine no matter what. I don't think I'm yet allowing myself to do that. So I think it's all of those thoughts in one. Something that Nick brought up to me afterwards, because we were walking around for a while just trying to unpack everything. And he was like, you know, I saw that you posted your PR and what you wanted to run for this race. And he was surprised that I did that. And that probably contributed to it too. And I can't emphasize enough, and I've talked about this on my Instagram, it's not that I was scared to not get my PR. It just absolutely played a part. And that's one of the thoughts that came into my mind. Like, I told people this is what I want to do. And now I can't do it. And now I suck. Like, I suck. I'm bad at Instagram. I'm bad at this. Like, I've, you know, and it absolutely played a part. What lies beneath is something that I'm going to work through with my therapist, but it's layered for sure.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for sharing all of that and for being really open. And, you know, I two things off the back of that. I think first is recognizing that at times a panic attack can be a true physical reaction.
Totally.
And then the second thing is there's a fine line, right? It's like, it is okay to want to be fast. It is okay to want to beat your PR.
Yeah.
It is okay, all these things. Where it becomes really challenging is to your point where it's like, if that's not happening, how do you prevent that like I suck spiral?
Yeah,
particularly in the moment. And that's hard, man.
And like, I think a lot of that is connected to other things as well that creeped up in that moment. Like it was like, it wasn't just that insecurity that I was feeling. It was many insecurities that I have. It wasn't just that. So it's really hard for me to sit there and be like, well, you know, it's just because I knew that I wouldn't make my PR. That doesn't even make sense because it was mile three. So like, and I was on pace except for 30 seconds. Like, you know, it I think it was a lot of things at once. And ultimately what made me walk off the course was the feeling of just absolute overwhelm. The feeling of my chest not being able to, like, I could not take a breath. I couldn't take a deep breath without feeling like I was choking on my breath, which has never happened. Even in workouts that I've been trying my hardest, I've never like experienced that feeling, which was really scary. And then the feeling of my vision, just like I couldn't see, like I couldn't put it all together. I was getting dizzy looking at my feet. And it was just like all of these sensations that I've never felt before, that I was like, no, this is something's wrong. Like, this is not okay. Something's wrong. I want to stop. I think it's a lot of that, but 100% it was my fear of I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. And I know that that's not true, that's the hardest thing to unpack. Yeah. That's the hardest thing for me to sit here and say, because I know that's not true. And I can almost guarantee if I had crossed that finish line 20 minutes above my PR, I think I would have felt better than I do right now about what happened, because guess what? That also happened in New York. Like, I finished way above my PR, and like, I've done that before. So it's really hard to understand. And I think a lot of people have been so kind in my comments and in my DMs saying like, if you've never had a panic attack before, like, you don't understand what that feels like. It feels like you're dying. Like, it's scary.
It's
a really scary moment. And it's a moment where it's like, I don't care what you're doing right now. Like, you have to stop. Like, this has to stop. That is the only thing you can think about. And that was really what happened to me. Like, I didn't have a choice. I didn't have a choice to slow down. I didn't have a choice to do anything but walk off that course. Like, that was it. That was my only choice. And that's, I think, why I can sit here and be like, not have many like regrets from that day, because there was no option. There was no option to continue and go slower and just go at like a very, like my easy run effort. I couldn't be out there. So that's scary. I never want it to happen again. And I don't think anything can help me except for therapy at this point with that. Actually, I want to take that back, because there is one thing that I do think is going to be helpful. Okay. And I've talked to Nick about it as well, which I'm kind of excited about. I think I need to race more. And this might sound like contradictory, but something I've talked about before on this podcast as well is like, last year I dropped out of a half marathon because I was feeling stressed out about it, and running in general just wasn't
like
happy.
Beforehand. This is Philly,
beforehand.
Right?
Yeah, Philly, where I didn't start, didn't even show up to the start line. So I really think for me, and I think everyone's different, again, this is something I'll continue to talk about, but for me, I think it's kind of like putting myself in those scenarios and creating positive associations with races. So I have a 10K coming up in a couple of weeks. I'm not sure how much I'm going to actually talk about it, because I want to kind of keep it to myself and keep it close to me. I'm not going to wear my watch for it. And I'm just going to like sign up for a bunch of 5Ks, 10Ks, maybe in a half, maybe even a half in the summer, and just like kind of go out there and run and see what happens and kind of put myself in those positions, because I don't have a background of doing that very often. A lot of my performance adjacent memories are through tennis, which was a very traumatic experience for me. So I think that's all connected very much so. So going out there and creating positive associations, I think, will be really helpful, because really the only positive association right now that I have with a race is like maybe the half that I had back in 2022 and maybe Chicago, but even Chicago was tough. Like it, you know, it, there's a lot to unpack and there's not a lot of positive moments that I have with racing. And it's not something that I'm willing to give up. Like I do want to race. I do want to run and get faster. And I think in order for me to do that, I just need to race, keep racing.
Yeah. And what I will say, it's like, yes, you can accumulate these positive experiences, but what you will also accumulate is like the confidence that we talked about, right? Totally. The confidence that if something happens, you know what to do.
Yeah.
Or the confidence that like, maybe I didn't feel great, but I still was able to do X, Y, Z or whatever, yeah, which is something that you get with live experience. And like touching on Chicago for a second, I mean, I drew on your race for inspiration for mine, yeah, when I was feeling sick and was like, nope, remember what Vicky said about Chicago and I need to shove this gel down. So like, yeah, maybe it wasn't the most positive experience for you, but you learned something,
yeah,
that I'm now selfishly like, and it helped me too. But,
oh, that's what I want. That's exactly what I want by talking about this. And I think that's why it's important. I think one of the things that I want people to know about this is number one, you have to do what's best for you, even if that means in the moment you step out of the race. And this is another reason I was getting triggered with some comments on my reels about this is like people were like, well, why didn't you just slow down? Why didn't you just stop? Why didn't you just keep going? Why did you stop? Why did you walk off? And it's like, because that wasn't right for me. Like,
yeah,
period. Like, yeah, that's it. And that's okay. Like, you know, and it's hard for me too, because I remember saying about Kipchoge last year in Boston when it wasn't his race and he just kept going and he just kept racing. And I thought that was really cool, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the right choice for him too. But that doesn't mean that no one should ever feel like they can't walk off the course. Like your long-term mental health and physical health, this goes for people who are experiencing injuries too, means so much more than crossing a finish line. Like that can't be said enough. Like this is for your... Again, I'm not putting food on my table with this race. Like there was no reason for me to continue feeling like I did. There was no choice. So I'm not going to sit here and feel shame because people on the internet wanted me to finish a race. Like, okay, I didn't. Suck it. Sue me.
Yeah, exactly. And like, no. And I'm proud of you for recognizing that.
I think too, there was something else that I wanted to say about comments, mainly because I have received a lot of positive ones, but the negative ones I've been getting have been, oh, this is what I wanted to say. There are also some people saying like, okay, well, clearly like you had a panic attack during this race. Like you should take a step back and reset and stop running. And that's not the answer for me either. So, you know, appreciate the advice. Like, thanks, guys. But that's not where I'm at. Like, if you listen to episode one of this, my training has been going amazingly. Like, I've been running awesome runs and feeling really good. Like, why would I stop that just because of this one race not going well? And I think that's another important thing. I think for a lot of people, it might mean they have to stop and reset. For me, it means I have to race without my watch and I have to put myself in those situations. I think it's important to remember that every single person goes through these things differently. And I know it's really, you know, when people put themselves out there on Instagram or whatever it is, you can feel like you just have to give your advice to everyone. But I think it's so individual. And the reason I'm sharing my story is not to tell others what to do. It's just to share that other like things happen and different things can happen. And the answer is not the same for every single person. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I will say, it's like, I think there are a lot of comments from like very well-meaning folks who are trying to help.
Oh my God. Totally. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about that.
No, I know. I know. Which is so great. And Vicky, I think speaks to the community you've created.
Yeah.
And like really making people feel comfortable sharing their experiences, their thoughts, either publicly or maybe just to themselves and like having that moment of acknowledgement. So yeah, just a quick shout out to you.
Thank you, Trey, because I don't want this to come off as me being like, screw the haters. Like, I'm going against all the bad comments. The amount of positive comments that I received. Also, just the amount of comments I receive from people who have been through this before.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this and you didn't read any of those comments or see any of my stories, you're not alone. This has happened to so many people. And to play on what Treg said earlier, to care for something is not a flaw, right?
Yeah.
It's not like you all of a sudden can't. And I think that's an amazing movement on Instagram too. It's like racing just to have fun, which is awesome. But I think both can be true. I actually already have a reels about this in my drafts, but both can be true. You can not let your paces define you and not care about paces and run quote unquote party pace at every race. I think that's amazing. I think that's awesome. But you can also care about your finishing time and care about wanting to get faster and care about wanting to get stronger. And both of those can be true. And we're here for every single one of you who feels either one of those. And I think it's important to reflect and remember that as well.
Absolutely. I think that's phenomenally said, Vicky. And like on that note, we know we're in the season of racing and,
yeah.
you know, there are a handful of majors going on, Boston last week, London this weekend.
Yeah.
Just like a huge shout out to everyone going
huge
through it.
Shout out.
Like,
huge shout out. Also, huge shout out to anyone racing right now, like not a marathon.
And oh,
I
yeah.
think it's so important because the majors, I feel like all kind of like Boston and London being so close together and all of these races in the spring. If you're listening to this and you're like, I've never run a marathon and I never plan on it, you are no less of a runner.
Oh, yeah.
You are no less of a runner. Like, hear me when I say that. I think there should be a major for like 10Ks.
Okay, hear me out. A 5K is harder than a marathon.
Hear me out. A mile is harder than a marathon. Like, are you kidding?
I huge up. So when I'm like, oh, I'm going to, you know, work on my mile for the summer, like, because that excites me and makes me a little nervous.
You're like,
right?
I'm kind of scared though. Yeah, get ready to throw up. Which, by the way, I just want to put this out. I think I'm going to start joining Hoboken Track Club. They have like a track Tuesday morning. If you want to, you know, like zoom yourself across the Hudson, join us on the track.
I'm going to need to like get a boat and or like.
Yeah, just get a boat.
Swim across. I think that made me.
Swim across.
This is swim our across. Solution.
One more thing, because I know you have to go because you're actually like a normal working human. I watched a documentary last night about a woman who swam or wanted to swim from, you know what I'm talking about, from Florida to Cuba or Cuba to Florida.
She did it. She did it.
Okay. Can I just say one thing about – what?
Did I spoil it?
Okay. No. Sorry. Spoilers ahead. Okay. What's it called? The Other Side or something? But let me just say
one – there are two. There's one where it's like a remake with actors, and then there's one where it's the actual documentary.
I watched the documentary. It's on Netflix.
They're both phenomenal. They're both phenomenal.
I want to watch that. I want to watch the other one. Tell me what that's on later. But one thing that I thought was so incredible about this documentary was – and this – I was almost in tears watching this last night. Like I literally stumbled on this. Nobody told me to watch it. I just was like, what should I watch tonight? They highlighted, like, the entire documentary was about her going out and trying this marathon swim from Cuba to Florida. And she failed at it 3 times. She couldn't – for insane reasons. Like, she got stung by, like, the craziest jellyfish alive. Like, not because she had a panic attack, but I'm going to make that comparison anyways. So what I thought was so beautiful about this documentary was – the fact that they highlighted so much of like her going out and her determination and her continuing to try at this, even though so many people were like, you're good. Like, it's okay. You've shown yourself, you've proven yourself. She's like, I know I can do this. I know I can do this. And the last like 10 seconds of the documentary is her actually doing it. And I thought that was such a beautiful way to highlight this documentary of the whole part is the journey. It's the failures. It's not the successes that we have to be constantly focusing on. It's the journey. And that's what I took from that to myself, which I could be totally just insane at this point.
No,
I took for myself, like, this is such a part of my journey. Like, I should celebrate the fact that I towed that start line. And I got 3 miles further than I did last year when I didn't even show up to the start line of my half marathon. Like, that is part of my journey. And I know one day in the future, years from now, I mean, this woman was like 65 when she actually ended up doing it, maybe even older. Like, it will be done. But
yeah,
I can't just erase these failures. And so I'm going to keep talking about them. And it's a part of my story. And I thought that was beautiful. So
that's awesome. Okay. I'm definitely going to text you more about this story because I'm like absolutely obsessed and have watched both iterations of like that.
It's incredible. For anyone who wants to watch it, you absolutely should and let us know what you think.
Yeah. And the learnings, I mean, like, yeah, it's about the journeys. It's the failures is what you've learned. And it's incredible. And like, I think really what you see there is her like unwavering self-belief.
Oh, unreal.
Just like unreal. Her love of her what love she's of trying it. To do. It's incredible. And yeah, it's inspiring in so many ways. Nayad is like the that's her last name, but that's the name of the film version. But her name's Diana Nayad. Check it out. Absolutely incredible.
It's just so serendipitous that like I randomly I was like, whoa, this seems interesting. And I've seen like I'm a documentary gal, so like I've seen all of them on Netflix. This isn't like I don't think it's a new documentary or anything. It's crazy how life works. So really, you know, look for these moments in life because they're all around us.
Yeah.
My and yogi's coming out.
I'll say one last one that's a little less serious. So as you know, today is Taylor Swift's new album release day.
Okay. No, it's 66 minutes in and we haven't brought up Taylor Swift once. I apologize, Swifties. That's horrendous.
But I had a moment. Out
so we talk about it. Okay, go.
But I have a moment.
Go.
I was getting coffee this morning. I'm walking back home and there's like this weird keychain thing on the ground that I've literally never seen before where it like flashes a name. I'll send you the video. I'm listening to the album and it's flashing the name Joe, which like my understanding is this album's about Joe, right? And so
I think Joe and Maddie Healy, but continue.
Okay. Mainly
about Joe.
What is this doing on the ground on my street? B, I've literally never seen this type of keychain before. And C, I'm listening to this album. This woman is in work.
Is it a sign that you're going to meet Joe Alwyn
today and be like, listen, I'm just going to sing these songs at you.
You know, it's a sign and we don't know what it means, but I think we're going to find out. We'll let you know on episode 3 what the Joe was in reference to. And also just for episode 3, let us know what you guys want to talk, what you want us to talk about. If you've ever had thoughts on your long run that you want to discuss, you let us know because that's what we're here for. We want you to take us with you on these long run journeys that you guys have. And yeah, we'll see you at the next one.
Awesome. Cool. See y'all next week.